Hi, good evening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Hard Truth with myself, David Vance.
And Ilana Massa. Hi, David.
Hi, Ilana. You know, it does not matter how often we do this, but I love that introduction music. It's such a, such a thrill to follow it.
The entire piece is beautiful as well. All his music is really good.
Well, I'm just actually, before we get into the topic, a few people have said to me, hey, David, where does that music come from? So you can tell us where the music comes from.
Yes, next time I'll bring the CD and I'll just flash it and tell them how they can order it.
Great. Yeah, that's fine. Okay, Ilana, we really couldn't be on planet Earth and not have missed the story of the week, which is, of course, the collapse of the so-called Afghanistani government and the return of the Taliban. They're back, this time with billions worth of US equipment, which is interesting. So I wonder, I mean, as I said, this story's been developing. It continues to develop. I think it's going to keep going. So just to start off with then, I mean, what was your take on what happened in the first instance?
Well, I think the background is so important, David. I mean, everybody's jumping in and you hear the bipartisan expected positions. Republicans are using this to hammer Biden, who in part, as you pointed out in your email to me, is quite right. There is never an optimal time to leave. We should have never occupied the place. And so nobody's looking at the background, at the country, what it is, what it's made of. And frankly, all we see from CNN's authoritarian females is the perspective of a real minority, women and a few people who have been co-opted to work for the United States. As Trump put it brilliantly in an interview to Hannity, proportionally, it's the highest paid army in the world. They really pay them to pitch. These people are mostly drug-addled, illiterate. And I'm quoting, I'm actually paraphrasing a marvelous journalist before CNN committed fully to authoritarian females who want to export the nanny state. Yeah. They had a gentleman by the name of Michael Ware. I think he was Australian. And he was, you know, in the mold of the rough journalist. And he said, look, you're dealing with potentates, warlords, tribal chiefs. That is the society. It's a feudal society. The main economy is built on the opium, the poppies. And there's no understanding of that. So now we have this absolutely shallow railing by Republicans and Democrats without any historical context. I mean, I would say, true, that the initial invasion of Afghanistan was online with just war theory. In other words, the Taliban wouldn't. Bush had said to the Taliban, you know, you are harboring Al Qaeda, who are responsible for the murder of 3,000 Americans on September 11. Give them over, and we will not do anything further. And the Taliban, point blank, refused to give Bin Laden and his ruffians over. And then came the invasion, which so far so good. Just war theory is behind that. Then came the occupation, nation building, you know, and that's where it went wrong and very unjustly to both sides.
Well, you know, Ilana, it as you say, I mean, it's 20 years ago now since this happened. But I mean, I remember reading you back then, and I remember you know, my own views, which happily are very much similar to yourself. I completely supported going after Al Qaeda to wipe them out. But at the time, I remember it thinking, hang on a second, building some sort of neo-Jeffersonian democracy in the deserts of Afghanistan, it's madness. And the problem is, Ilana, that once we were in, and actually I was talking to our producer about this before we came on air, and he made the same point. Going in is one thing, getting out, it's never going to be good. It's going to be very, very difficult.
Yeah, and so criticizing Biden, people, I know some of our viewers and listeners will claim we are left, but we are hard, so hard right. We are almost left, but so hard right. But there is never a good way or an optimal way to leave Afghanistan. And I think it is a good thing he did that decisively. Of course, President Trump, and God, I having watched an interview with him, I now know why I wrote a book about him and supported him. Yes. The man's charismatic and to the point and has all the facts at his fingertips. And he was saying very strategically, there's a way to disembark, to leave. And you don't leave first with the army, women and children first, you know, civilians. Yeah. First, get all the Americans out. All we hear from the females on MSNBC and CNN is, oh, the Afghans, the refugees, they love us. The real priceless one is our soldiers will suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder if we don't get their friends out. Play date, David. So we're hearing all these crazy, infantile, idiotic. Of course, there was a way to do it. He messed up badly, but I didn't object to his address at all.
No, and we talked about this, Ilana, and as I said to you at the time, I felt that quite a bit of the content in his speech was right. And there's we talk about hard truths on this platform together. And one of the hard truths, Biden said it out loud, why should Americans fight for Afghanistan when Afghanistanis won't fight for Afghanistan? Why should America do that? He was right. That bit of it was right. Now, the bungled exit, it's just such a mess. It's such a disaster. Yeah, but that part was right. And that's been ignored by so many commentators, I think, Alana, certainly over the years anyway. They were quite happy for Americans to die, and Brits, by the way, to die as well, in the desert of Afghanistan, lose limbs. Oh, that was all fine. Why? What was the point in it?
And David, so many of these so-called people, these assistants, these people that we now have to import and give refugee status, so many of them did turn against the soldiers, and there were countless incidents of assassinations by these people. But then again, just to go back to what you said, why should we fight when Afghanis are not prepared to fight? What is the goal? We coerced them. We enforced our goal for their society on them. So they might be fighting, but for different stuff, as so many hardcore journalists before they brought in these females, some of them with a Y chromosome, you know, that don't do journalism on the ground at all. So many said, when we go into Afghanistan, we see people with loyalty to family, to tribe, even to the valley in which they inhabit. And that's something we are almost yearning for in our advanced stage of global citizen. You know, we don't have allegiances, but that's what they have. So we've defined the mission as making them, you know, training 300,000 members of the armed forces, making them see that a central government is great. But that's not what they were seeing. We were paying them to do that. So we defined the mission. They had very little say in that. So in a sense, it's unfair to our soldiers to have put them in such a precarious position, and it's certainly unfair to the Afghanis, whose the only perspective we are hearing now is not villagers and only the few women that we've appointed there, you know, and the girls. I don't know about the girls, and as far as I'm concerned, people have to fight and define their own freedoms.
Okay, so here's a question for you, Ilana. Do you think that we have any moral obligation to absorb?
You answer that one first. It's difficult.
Well, to absorb tens of thousands of refugees. Yeah, I'll give you my answer first. Absolutely not. The correct number for us to take in the UK, at any rate, I've said it today on social media, zero, none, nada, zilch. Yeah.
Let me point out that my colleague has also raised his finger, and not in a heart. He hasn't done the heart shape, but in a zero.
We don't, Alana. And the UK, by the way, today has said, this is why I despise Conservatives, by the way. Here, the Prime Minister said, we're going to take in 25,000. 25,000, right? And this is, like, the UK is a lot smaller than the US. And then senior Conservative said, no, needs to be like 50,000, maybe more. And then later today, he said, oh, by the way, we're going to double the aid that we send to Afghanistan. It disgusts me. But anyway, none of them should come here. We paid our debt of honour in the blood of our military. That's it. That's what I think. What do you think, Alana?
Yeah, I sympathise completely. And I think that if the national interest is, if the treason class in Britain and in the US and had the national interest of its own people at heart, then nobody would come in. The southern border would be closed. We'd have a moratorium on immigration because we are exploding because we're so fractious and hating of one another. And certainly we wouldn't bring in these Afghani refugees. But I think there is a moral framework that as a petering out empire, we don't even have to speak about what we have done to these societies. Yes, and I mean, the road to heaven is paved with good intentions, but, you know, if you look at history, there was no reason to invade Iraq or Afghanistan. Yeah. And the damage we've done to Iraqi Christian communities are devastated. They survived under Saddam quite well. The Jewish community, ancient Jewish community, had to be airlifted by Israel. And Afghanistan, we have done untold damage as well. I mean, just Bagram. I was reading about Bagram. Shall I just tell you what do you know what Bagram entailed? When we speak about Bagram, and this is I'm quoting a brilliant author, Cullen Murphy, Are We Rome? He wrote the book. He said, Bagram is an outpost of American civilization. Bagram Air Base supports a population of more than 5,000. The base perimeter, 9 miles around, is ringed not with walls of stone and mud, but with chain-linked fencing and concertina wires. In other words, it is so hated, it had to be electrified fences. And it was just an imported style American city. There were giant malls, hospitals, precinct packed with contractors from the military-industrial complex making hay, checkpoints, multi-denominational chapels, Vegas-style facilities, quickie naturalization centers for Afghan recruits. This gentleman writes, Bagram embodies imperial overreach, the idea that one's security needs, military obligations, and globalist desires increasingly outstrip resources available to satisfy them. So the obscene presence, and again, the Ayatollahs that they have there, when things happen, like, you know, when we peed on excuse my language, when we peed on corpses and that went on live links. And I wrote a column titled, To Pee or Not to Pee is Not the Question. you know, how come we are debating whether we should pee them rather than whether we should invade and kill them, you know? So the Ayatollahs were reiterating the same point. They said, well, burning Qurans, doing this to desecrating bodies, etc. The problem is the presence of infidels in a Muslim country. That's how they see it. That's how they see it. Are we going to change these people? These are ancient tribes, Pashtun primitives, if you will. We're not going to change that. And I think that's the background.
So you're
saying, do we owe them something? What do you say? I guess I would say we don't have the framework, the moral or the ethical or the military or the civil or legal framework within which to set up anything like that. But strictly as a right-wing libertarian, I would say that I would be more happy paying reparations to Afghanis or Iraqis who suffered war than to African Americans stateside.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's fair enough.
I'm not enthusiastic, but I think there isn't the moral framework to do that, but I think we have done a lot of damage.
But don't you think there's also, Alana, there's a massive contradiction at the heart of all of this? We're being told at the moment, oh, look, the evil Taliban, the bad Taliban have swept into town, and all the moderate Afghans are now, you know, we've got to sort of provide sanctuary for those who flee. And yet, here's the thing, these people are all Muslim. All the nations around Afghanistan are Muslim nations. I want to know, why are those Muslim nations not providing the sanctuary to their kin who may feel somewhat alarmed at the Taliban's approach to that particular ideology? But I don't understand, why do they have to come to the West when in that geographical space there's
exactly loads of countries? And they would be far happier settled. Yeah. That's why I say, not through the state, but certainly through NGOs, through private organizations. There's so much, you know, when you think of what US aid gives to foreign aid, it's in the billions. I don't know if it's 8 billion or 10 billion or more, but charity, private charity doesn't double that, doesn't triple that. It is in the hundreds of billions that we send privately abroad. So yeah, I would say, fine, you know, the churches can do wonders, the organizations that are responsible, leave the state out of it, leave the poisonous UN out of it. Fine, go there, help them, settle them after this absolute after this invasion and this constant fighting. They will continue to war among themselves. China will move in and colonize the China acts in its national interest, so that China will move in and plunder Afghanistan and will make use of the opioid and co-opt the opioid trade to its own interests. And I guess that's what's going to happen. But why don't the Muslim countries around help? It's the same reason that, you know, the very wealthy, the far wealthier nations of the Middle East don't help the Palestinians. Eternal refugees resettle because it is a political project, isn't it? Yeah. It's a political program to keep them disenfranchised. It makes Israel have to pay.
But there's another point I wanted to talk to you about, and you raised it to me, and I think it's a really good point, and it's not really been understood. And again, it's another kind of hard truth. It's not the Taliban who have swept in to across Afghanistan. Yes, it's the Taliban, but it's the many different tribal areas. It's the various different groups, because the reality is that Afghanistan, it's as you said, Alana, it's a very decentralized culture and country. It's not a kind of a central state like we have in the UK and you've got in the US. It's not like that. So I think it's very disingenuous, for example, for the media to present this as a Taliban victory. No, it's an Afghanistan victory, I think.
Exactly. We don't really know how many. I would suspect that most the society is quite behind the Taliban. Yeah. And I want to quote this Michael Ware, fantastic journalist in 2009. He said, this was on CNN when they allowed this sort of reporting. You want to train 40,000 Afghans? Good luck with training 40. You know, he said, many are high, most are illiterate, and almost all are uninterested in being part of our centralizing efforts. The whole society, he shouted on CNN, is built on a feudal system. It's corrupt, riddle regime of warlords and potentates. That is what Afghanistan has always been. That's what it's going to be in the future. And all he was saying, as being a journalist on the ground, is what you can do is work with tribal and chieftains locally and see if they can keep order. And when I see the Taliban sitting on a porch and doing Islamic tribal justice, well, isn't it? And then some CNN woman comes up swaddled respectfully with the abaya or the chias, and she said, Oh, you're going to cut his hand. You're going to chop his hand off because he's a thief. How dare you? How dare you? And he says, well, what would you like better than we have a society of thieves, like I guess in America, where you can steal up to $1,000 in California without being prosecuted, or teach them a lesson? Biblical, I guess. I'm not saying I like it, but that's their way.
Well, the Taliban also made a brilliant point in their press conference yesterday, where somebody, again, one of these, lamestream media people said to them, oh, you know, well, what about freedom and free speech, blah, blah, blah. And the Taliban turned around and said, well, what about, you know, what about your Facebook in the United States closing down free speech? And I have to say, and I've put this point out today, it's a bit rich to bitch about the Taliban.
Exactly, David. I want our, and all these people, you and I, you are off Twitter, as I keep saying. You had an enormous forum there. Whenever you go on social media, and politely and genteelly, you gain hundreds of thousands of people, of followers, that you're off there. I want my government to look after my freedoms. But all I hear is about the Uyghurs and the Afghans and this. Nobody cares. Let them sort themselves out. Absolutely, I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, the Taliban, I mean, this is the hypocrisy. And it's actually evidence, isn't it? The state into which our societies have fallen, even in the past 20 years, where it's very hard now. I mean, you look at the Taliban and you look at the sort of administrations we have, and okay, you might argue around the degree of barbarism, but in many regards, there's vast similarities, and some people don't want to acknowledge that. But I think that's another hard truth. Silicon Valley silences us just like the Taliban may silence some people, I suppose.
Exactly, law and order here is a joke. I mean, in California, there department stores can't keep open because nobody shows this on mainstream media, but they do on Fox. There's a regular stream of people going in because you can steal to the tune of 1,000 and they don't prosecute you. Can you imagine? Okay, I would say make an example. Bring the Taliban in. Let them sit in a circle in front of Saks or Nordstrom and let them do some justice for stealing to the tune of $1,000 designer items. It wouldn't happen again.
No, that's why I think we shouldn't be overly judgmental about the Taliban, because don't point out the mote in someone else's eye when you've got a plank in your own. And too many in the West. Another thing I wanted to talk about was the whole partisanship of what we're seeing at the moment, especially in the States now, between Republicans and Democrats in this one. And I saw a poll, Alana, just before we've come on air, a new poll that shows that Biden's, he's marginally more popular than the Black Death at the moment in some polls I've seen. So his popularity is being damaged, and I see Republicans jumping in all over the spot. But I think, it's Tweedledee, Tweedledum to me. I'm not overly impressed by either side. I am impressed with what Trump said. I have to say that in that interview. That was impressive. The rest of it is white noise to me. What do you think?
Absolutely, and he was the first person on television to acknowledge. He said about the Taliban, he respects these strong men. And of course, CNN girls will say, oh, he loves strong men. No, he said, these are tough people, they are not stupid people, and they are very good fighters. And as having grown up in Israel, we were always, after the 67 war, when all we saw was piles of shoes left in the desert after the Israel absolutely vanquishing and winning that war. But things have changed. Things have really changed. And these people are excellent fighters, especially those that are tribal and not associated with a state. And I think even Israel has had to step back and get some perspective after 73, when it was walloped absolutely, and almost, the Egyptian troops almost reached the center of Israel. However, we've always grown up with such contempt for fighting prowess, but we are growing fat and they are still lean and they're fighting for tribe, they're fighting for the opium trade, they're fighting, they have more stake in the country than we do. And there's nothing we can do with our grand ideas of democracy or nation building that's going to change that. It's up to them. Look, what do you say about the whole woman thing? What is your opinion about, you know, the whole stance in the media, David, is that, oh, we fought for and I hear Democrats, a woman from the Independent Forum, you know, sounding, not Democrats, Republicans sounding just like Democrats. Oh, we've given them these rights. The women are going to school. What do you say about that when they?
Yeah, I mean, I've mocked it. I mean, what about trans rights in Afghanistan? How will the LGBTQ plus community cope? I mean, this is the West again, and I agree. This is the West kind of genuflecting their own idol fantasies onto entirely different cultures. You know, we all know, I mean, the Taliban, again, were quite clear in this one. They said today that they're coming out and saying, we will protect women within the context of Sharia. Well, anyone who understands Sharia means that, I mean, they're being plain in what they're saying. They're basically saying, we're going to, you know, this is our societies, and this is the way we're going to operate, and that's it. So all your Western weak-kneed, sort of socially depraved values, they mean nothing, and we just laugh at you. And by the way, the minute the last American exits Afghanistan, mm-hmm. the Taliban will most definitely apply all that Sharia law means. But the West doesn't like to talk about Sharia too much, Alana, because it's awkward.
Yes, and you remember that line, it occurred to me when you asked me, is Islam a problem there? Well, Islam is a problem there and everywhere, isn't it?
It is, to be fair, yeah.
I believe that it was one of your British brave people got up at Hyde Park and tried to quote Churchill about Islam, because Churchill had plenty to say about Islam.
He did.
He believed it was benighted, malign religion that could never reform, but he got arrested for hate speech, for quoting. But Bush and his acolytes, millions of them, and certainly Fox News, we have to be there so they don't come here. I mean, can you imagine the joke in that illogic? As if the terrorists fantasizing or scheming on blowing up something here can't chew gum and walk at the same time. Our country's open. So I would certainly want to see us protect our borders, our sovereignty, limit the people that come here. You know, we have people living under bridges in every city, incredible poverty. I was reading in The Economist that, you know, more than 50% of Americans are incapable of deciphering simple text or even instructions on a medicine bottle. We have tremendous problems in the United States, and it's hubris, it's sanctimony, it's a travesty to our people because it's done with taxpayer money to even consider these, you know, these forays into faraway regions.
Well, especially as they always give you the blowback. The blowback is the people allegedly fleeing the problems. And I understand that the first flight of refugees actually touched down last night here in the UK. Like, that's amazing. And I wonder how many of them were vaccinated, Alana. How many had their vax passed? I'm not sure about that, because I know I couldn't get into the UK without that. But it seems Afghan refugees are okay. But, you know, here's a point I was just to touch on with you. Like, another difficulty I have with them coming here is that we have a very different societies, and these people are not used and necessarily even respect our values. So isn't the kinder thing to keep them in their own areas and not expose them, if you like, to the things that we do? In fact, many regard it's a very humanitarian thing to do that.
Especially, David, to the racism, the systemic racism. I mean, we have terribly systemically racist societies. Why would you bring Afghans or Africans or Somalis to such terribly unjust societies as is the Anglo-American sphere, right?
Well, I've never understood that one, Alana. Why would anyone want to do that to them when we know that we are so, as you say, systemically racist and awful? So I think if we're following that logic too, I think we keep the borders closed. I don't think the politicians, however, are going to do that. And I see
they're not listening to you. And by the way, affirmative action, the way it works, it's such a treasonous and treacherous system, does mean that anyone who can claim minority status will probably get those jobs at Walmart or Kmart or Target before local unemployed will do. And that's, I can see that all over the place where the checkout lady is someone who speaks very little English, but has come here on some sort of dubious visa. So they will benefit from all those laws on the fact that we are systemically racist.
Yeah, and despite all that, and despite the fact that our economies have gone down the plug hole, care of COVID restrictions and lockdowns and all of that. So economically, if we wanted to look at that, talk about that aspect of it, you know, economically, our countries have to be looking after our own people, many of whom don't have a job or struggle on the breadline. So to bring in, you know, legions of people from, I'm afraid, foreign distant lands is, as we've said earlier in this one, it doesn't make sense on any other level other than to virtue signal. And that's all the politicians and the media do. They want to virtue signal. That's why they sicken me and they annoy me so much.
It doesn't make sense, and it's treason, you know, when your people are you know, without resources and in dire straits. It's treason to think that you can take the money from their coffers and allocate it to ambitious you know, forays overseas and adventurous foreign policy, only to aggrandize the state and the overlords in DC. That's all. And the military industrial complex. And now we're going to hear again and again from the veterans that, why did I sacrifice them, my limbs and my friends and that? But that, again, with all the sympathy in the world, and actually I don't have sympathy for that argument, it's the sunk cost fallacy, you know, that because you've embarked on a mission that is wrong, not necessarily military, to redeem your self-esteem or redeem those sunk costs, you need to keep doing the same thing over and over again. All it does redeem is stupidity, really.
Although I do have sympathy for the individual, the families of the soldiers. I mean, there's a cemetery not far from where I live, and there's a couple of young men who were killed in Afghanistan and also in Iraq. I mean, it's a nightmare. But anyway, who you know, they've lost their lives there. Those families don't have, those sons are gone. And it's all, but it's the lesson of history, isn't it? I mean, this is, unfortunately, what wars do. They, you know, they create widows and they create missing, you know, people around tables. And it's a sad business. But ultimately, Alana, I think, you know, we started this one talking about 20 years ago. And so where Biden does deserve some credit is he pulled the plug. It needed pulled. He's done it in a disastrous fashion.
Absolutely.
But it needed done. And nobody wants, I don't think too many people want to hear that. But I thought, since you and I both agree in that it's the right thing, yes, I think that is, for me, the hardest truth of all, that Biden is right to have pulled the plug. But yes, he could have done it so much better. And actually, just a very final point before we go, we touched on China just very, very quickly.
Yes.
And you rightly observed, Alana, that I think China will fill the void in terms of they'll be the new sort of sugar daddy for the Taliban. They'll plow their money and they'll absolutely ravage Afghanistan for all it's worth, is what I think. Do you think the same?
Absolutely. There is a, for them, it's in the national interest and it's the extractive view of intervention. They're doing that in Africa. They're absolutely extracting all resources, raw resources, I believe, too. And so, no, I don't think Afghanistan is going to benefit much more from China, except that China will be doing it for their own national interest, and they will do it judiciously, unlike we have done it. And just the point about the sacrificed young men, and that's very sad. I think, you know, a just war, when men are fighting just wars, and those are wars to defend your own communities and your own borders, there could be a sense of closure. But when you are enlisting in the service of fighting these unjust wars, and they're not just at all, I don't think we've been engaged in a just war. Some libertarians would say that even the Second World War, but I think that was a just war.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And the Revolutionary War was a just war. The war between the states, the War of Northern Aggression, was a war inflicted by Abraham Lincoln. However, just wars are far and few between, and when you fight for an imperial army, you are going to die for naught. You are going to die without seeing anything on the ground. And to come then and say, I'm an activist for staying because I've sacrificed a husband or a son or a daughter, is I'm afraid not a legitimate argument when the war is unjust.
Okay, well, on that note, Alana, we shall bring our proceedings to an end. So thank you very much for being here. Now, I hope everyone's enjoyed that. If you're watching it or if you're listening to it, whichever way, please make sure you subscribe to our channel on wherever that is, because we're on so many different platforms, and look forward to catching up with you next week, Alana. So that's goodbye from me.
Bye-bye for me.
Bye.